Fine, thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the Court, Michael Tanaka, Deputy Federal Public Defender, appearing on behalf of Mr. Hammons. I'd like to reserve a minute or two for rebuttal, if I may.
Yeah, try to keep your voice up a little bit.
Okay.
All right.
In this case, the district court sentenced Mr. Hammons to 10 months imprisonment upon finding that he had violated his supervised release. In doing so, the court gave no reasons for the choice, didn't refer to the guidelines, and even under a plein air review, the sentence must be vacated and the case remanded. First, there was clearly error. The court never addressed any of the statutory factors under 3583E. The court never addressed the guideline range. The court failed to explain the sentence. In fact, the court said virtually nothing at all with respect to the sentence at the hearing itself, and said nothing with respect to the reasons for imposing the sentence.
Now, we asked you to be prepared to discuss Lockman today. Would you like to do that now? You didn't mention it before.
My reply brief, yes. Yes, Your Honor, I believe Lockman controls this case. In Lockman, as in here, the court found plain error and found they are required vacating the sentence and reversing. In Walk 9, as here, the court failed to announce the guideline range, failed to announce the reference to 3583 factors, and then the court in Walk 9, this court found that the standard was whether there was a reasonable probability that the sentence might have been different had there not been any error. And based on what it found to be blatant error in failing to address the guidelines and in failing to give any reasons for the sentence, the court found there's a reasonable possibility. Same as here. We have a number of reasons why the sentence may have been different had the court not erred. That is, certainly some of the statutory factors that go into choosing an appropriate sentence are the rehabilitation. And here, as the defense counsel pointed out at the hearing, based on the conduct underlying the violation, which was a state charge for driving under the influence, between the time of picking up that conviction and the time of the hearing in this case, Mr. Hammons had completed his community service, or made substantial progress to it, had completed a drunk driving course, had completed job training, and had participated in AA. So he had made substantial efforts towards rehabilitating himself in the conduct that was the cause of the violation. Further, the probation officer in this case had recommended against custody and had recommended commitment to a halfway house for further treatment. Again, the court didn't reference any of that, and it's certainly reasonably possible that had the court done so, it might have chosen an alternative to incarceration at the top of the guideline range. And finally, last factor that suggests that the sentence might have been different had the court not erred is that the court, to the extent there was a guideline range, and we don't know what guideline range, advisory guideline range, the court was using, because, again, it never referenced it and it never announced it. But to the extent that one was calculated, the only guideline range calculated was in the probation officer's report, and that was a wrong range. It was calculated using the wrong criminal history. So had the court reference the range, it's certainly possible at that point someone might have said, hey, that's the wrong range, or we would at least known that the court was using the wrong range. Had the court used the right range, which was a lower range, it's certainly reasonably possible that the sentence would have been different. Under these facts, the conclusion is clear that there was plain error.
Well, the government argues, among other things, that the violation report was not the only document in front of the judge. In fact, the judge also had the pre-sentence investigation report and the Alabama judgment, both of which correctly stated it was a Category 2, not a Category 3 offense. Since you didn't respond to that, I wondered what your comment is about that.
Well, again, had the court announced what ranges were referring to, we wouldn't have to speculate on whether the court went back and looked at the pre-sentence report and then decided that the probation officer's report, which was actually, you know, the most important document before it, was actually in error. And then we could further speculate that had the court actually done that, the court might have said, oh, by the way, the probation officer's report is in error, and here's the correct range, and that's what I'm using. Absent any of that, it's just sheer speculation to suggest that the court went back and did that, particularly when what we have before it is an incorrect
range. But the court sentenced him to 10 months, which was within the appropriate range. And since he had these multiple documents before him, why should we call it plain error?
Well, because there is no indication that the court used the right range. We know that he had these documents before him, and that's always going to be the case. But without any indication that the court relied on the proper documents outside of a sentence that's within the range, and that actually was within both ranges, we can't know whether it was there's a reasonable. I mean, there is obviously a reasonable, leaves open the issue, question of whether there's a reasonable possibility that the sentence would have been different had the court not erred.
The district court didn't discuss the appropriate sentencing factors that are set out in 3553. Did he do that?
No, he did not, Your Honor. That's
and in 3583?
No, he made not one single reference to either of those.
And did he state his reasons for imposing a 10-month sentence?
As far as I can tell from the record, there is absolutely no reasons given whatsoever.
Are you saying that under Lucknini, that constitutes plain error?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And that's that's what that case stands for. That's your position.
That's correct. And presumably, Lucknini, the court had before it a PSR that had the correct range as well. So just that we know that there's a correct range out there someplace is certainly not dispositive of the issue.
So in Lucknini, the court stated that the district court's total failure to announce its calculated guidelines range to the parties and to consider expressly the section 3553A factors is such a serious departure from established procedures that we will not reject the appeal because of the prejudice prong of plain error review.
That would be our position as well, Your Honor.
Okay. You want to save some time for rebuttal?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Ashley Aiken on behalf of the United States. There are two issues before the court today that we are discussing, whether there was plain error in regards to the 3553 factors and whether there was plain error in regards to the perceived failure to calculate the criminal history category. And in this respect, the court has directed us to the Lucknini case.
Well, tell me what did it doesn't seem to me as if Judge Wilson, who moves rather quickly, that he really followed the requirements of 3553 or 3583.
And I think,
let me tell you this, I think the guidelines are an abomination. You know, they're illegal, they violate the Constitution, and they've just created tremendous problems. But we have them. And, you know, you've got to go through the guidelines, even though they're illegal and they're advisory. And if you're going to depart from them, you've got to give your reasons and all this. And I've got to be very careful when you handle this. Now, it doesn't seem to me as if he was very careful here.
I think the right.
He was upset with him because of this drunk driving conviction. And so he was going to punish him for that.
And I think, in my opinion, because this is a probation revocation matter, what the court was concerned of is not punishment, which is not a factor that's appropriate.
Well, what's the problem with sending it back and telling him to do it right?
Well, because I think the legal standard here is that we need to maintain that it was a plain error. We don't have that in this matter.
Were you the U.S. attorney at the time?
Yes, I was, Your Honor.
Well, don't you think maybe your job would have been to say to Judge Wilson, "Oh, Your Honor, I know it's a burden, but we've got to comply with 3553 and 3583. And then you probably said, "Oops, I need to comply with it." And did you call his attention to the error in the calculation?
In reference to the what was in the probation report?
Yeah.
No, I did not.
You see, if you'd have done that, we wouldn't be here today. Because, you know, I'm not really faulting you because I know him and he probably wouldn't have listened to you anyway. So, but at least we'd had a record where you called that to his attention and he might have, you know, he's a good friend of mine. I love him dearly. But, you know, the rule's a rule.
And if I could have just address the court's concerns in regards to that matter, while Judge Wilson didn't specifically say, "I'm considering the 3553 factors specifically," he did go through and have a colloquy with the defendant about the nature of the offense, whether any rehabilitation had worked. In this case, because it was a probation revocation matter, we had had four violations before the court, three of which were dismissed. One of those dirty tests occurred between him admitting the allegation, one, the DUI, and the sentencing. So when I think Judge Wilson was really speaking to a breach of the court's trust.
Well, he's got to say that, what he's doing. That's all. This few sentences, we wouldn't be here today.
But I think that can be inferred from his line of questioning with the defendant.
Yeah, why should we have to infer anything?
I agree with Your Honor that this is not a textbook way that we would consider what we would like to have the sentencings go, but I don't think that it amounts to plain error because I don't think the third and fourth prongs of the plain error standard are met in this case. I don't think that at this point the defendant can say that there was a that it affected his substantive rights in this matter.
Doesn't this you heard the quote that I read from Wakini, didn't you? The court stated that the district court's total failure to announce its calculated guideline range to the parties and to consider expressly the section 3553A factors as such a serious departure from established procedures that we will not reject the appeal because the prejudice prong of plain error review.
And I think that in this matter, I think what's different in this case than in Wakneen is that Judge Reel, the district court judge in that matter, didn't state any reasons, didn't have any colloquy with either counsel or the defendant about the reasons that he was offering this sentence, where in this case, Judge Wilson was very concerned about the fact that rehabilitation didn't seem to be working with this defendant and was questioning him. And in the violation report, it said that he was going to be doing these classes. It said that he was going to be going to AA. Judge Wilson knew, the district court knew this at the time, and at that point his colloquy with the defendant concerned whether he thought that incarceration was appropriate as opposed to whether rehabilitation was appropriate, which is what probation and Mr. Hammond's counsel was advocating, as was the government. I think what the issue here, what really differentiates our case from Wakneen, is that, one, I don't think substantive of rights were affected in that there is no defendant can't put forth any proof or any evidence that Judge Wilson was even considering rehabilitation. Judge Wilson went for a high-end sentence when it comes to incarceration. And the fourth prong, when it talks about undermining the public reputation and confidence in the proceedings, the district court's reasoning, I think, is pretty clear from the colloquy he had with the defendant. He intentionally chose incarceration over the recommendation of rehabilitation. He intentionally chose a high-end sentence, no matter what criminal history category range we're looking at. He chose a high-end incarceration sentence as opposed to a 4 or 5 month range. And when we look about considering the breach of the court's trust, I think the public's reputation and confidence in the proceeding is not undermined because we know that Judge Wilson was looking at this because he was concerned.
Is he required those factors, as I recall, those are factors that you're not supposed to consider when you're dealing with a violation of probation?
He's not allowed to consider punishment. The 3553A1 factor that deals with punishment is not in the purview of the.
There's some other factors.
There are a lot of the 3553A factors, but not all of them. But
he considered some that he's told he shouldn't consider.
I don't think that the record reflects that. I think when he reflected the ones that you are supposed to reflect, which are the nature and circumstances of the offense, he questioned the defendant about the DUI, how did it happen, what steps were taken after. He also spoke to him about deterrence. I know on the record in the excerpt, the defendant made a comment that he was no longer drinking when we had a violation in between the admitting of allegation one and the actual sentencing date, which the defendant stated on the record. I think that goes a lot to the deterrence factor and the fact that rehabilitation doesn't seem to be working with this defendant.
In light of that, now obviously events that occur between the initial petition to revoke probation or supervised release and the ultimate disposition are very significant. But what is the significance of, one, him denying it, and two, as part of the resolution, you're dismissing it? Under those circumstances, wouldn't it be inappropriate for us to consider that?
I just think that looking at the totality of the circumstances, that there were other allegations that rehabilitation had not worked for this defendant. This was not his first violation of supervised release. He did have a prior violation. This one, when we did have a DUI conviction, which is the one the government decided to move forward on in the allegation that was admitted and uncontested, we also had two dirty tests and a no-show. And that is it is part of the court record, although we did dismiss the allegations. They are at this point just allegations.
He denied everything but the
that is correct.
DUI. So his denial coupled with your dismissal pretty well took that off the table, didn't it?
I think it is no longer part of the record when he was judging it. He was just running through the 3553 factors as it pertained to the DUI conviction. And his colloquy of the defendant was just for the DUI conviction. So in that matter, I think running through the judge did touch on the 3553 factors when he was addressing the colloquy with the defendant. And that doesn't, because he did address the 3553 factors as required in a probation revocation, although he didn't specifically say that's what he was doing, it can be inferred from the record. It doesn't meet the third prong, which says that the defendant can show that there was an effect of his substantive rights, and it doesn't meet the fourth prong, which says that this is going to undermine the public's faith in our system and how these sentencings are carrying out. Although I do concede it wasn't a textbook way to run the sentencing, I don't think any substantive rights of the defendant were affected in this matter, and there was nothing that the defendant put forward that would show.
Well, is the court required to state the reasons for imposing a particular sentence?
Not if it's within guideline range. I mean, this is a within guideline range, I think, under the Cartee decision.
Section 3553 requires the court to state reasons for imposing a particular sentence. And, I mean, that language here, that comes out of an in-bank case, the Cardi case, decided this year. And uh, It's certainly not a textbook, so but we have these procedures, and I don't like them, and I'm sure he doesn't like them, but I guess we have to follow them. And I mean, you're a good advocate, I can see that, and we should have told him what he had to do at that time.
It was my first appearance as an AUSA. What? It was my first appearance as an AUSA. Looking back on it, I wish I had too.
Well, how long ago was that?
About 4 or 5 months ago.
Well, you sure became a skillful advocate very quickly, I'll say that.
Well, thank you, Your Honor.
All right. And I know he can probably be a little intimidating, but anyway, oh, you're over your time. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. If the court has no other questions, I'll submit. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right.
Just a couple of quick points. One, I want to sort of emphasize the point that Judge Pregerson made in reference to the mistaken argument, and that is she had argued that the colloquy provided reasons for the sentence choice, and to the extent that it did is another reason to vacate the sentence. The, one of the inferences that the government drew from that colloquy was that Judge Wilson believed that the underlying violation was a serious offense. And again, under McBail, that's expressly precluded in a supervised release violation.
Well, isn't it more accurate to say that the case you cite says that the court cannot stress retribution, but it is under an obligation to be concerned about community protection? So when you're talking about something like drunk driving, particularly where someone, assuming we can consider the fact that the man continued to drink, certainly drunk driving creates a danger to the public. And to the extent that the judge is saying it's serious for that reason, he's certainly not violating the rule against relying on retribution.
No, I agree, Your Honor. And if Judge Wilson had said that explicitly, then we wouldn't be here. But he did not. So there are certainly competing inferences from what he said to the extent that you can draw anything from what he said. And my final point that I want to make is that if this court does, in fact, vacate the sentence that we would request that the mandate issue immediately. Mr. Hammonds is already in custody, and his sentence is only 10 months. I think his release date is July 13th.
What did you say again?
Mr. Hammonds is in custody on the sentence, so if the court were to vacate it, I would ask that the court consider immediately issuing the mandate so we could get this case back before Judge Wilson.
Why are you speaking to that microphone?
We request that the court issue the mandate immediately if it were to vacate the sentence so that we could get the case back before Judge Wilson before he finished his sentence. Mr. Hammonds was only sentenced to 10 months. He's due to be released July 13th, 2009.
Oh, okay. I got it. Next year. Thank you. This matter has been submitted. And let's see. We come to... next case is North...